This will be good when they throw this in at the beginning. Yeah, these guys don't. Stop. These guys.
Fucking dumb and dumber. Okay.
All right, we're off and running. Hi again, everybody. Jungle Jim Jerome coming to you. I'll tell you in a second why I'm laughing. This is yet another episode of the Suspendables, which is up and rolling, baby. I get a bunch of texts from people here in the commercials all across Canada and elsewhere for the podcast. We're super excited. And we've partnered with Global Story Network, who has a huge platform of podcasts that they've just started. So check them out, globalstorynetwork.com, to find out all about them. We love them. We couldn't do this without them. And Rusty, you're on the other end. You're there.
Yep, I'm here.
We got you off the golf course. The reason we're laughing is the way we record this is that we click the start recording button before the guy hangs up the phone. Okay, who hooks us in, the tech guy, Chris, who you've all come to love and know very well now. And then we start asking ourselves some questions about what we're going to do on the show. And Russ and I just couldn't figure out what high school was, or prep school. I said, what's prep school? I don't know. Is it between high school and college?
Canadian, so for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, that's our poll question for the week, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're back. You're on the golf course. Who'd you play with, Russ? You just got off the golf course. You're in
Gaza. I played 9 holes today with Brendan Morrow, retired hockey player, NHL star.
Good hockey player.
Yep. Yeah, Olympian, gold medal guy. Good player. Yep. Awesome guy, great friend. And then Ray Whitney, who's
and
retired.
A good golfer. Eh?
Oh, Brendan boy. They're Ray Whitney and Brendan Morrow are probably our two best golfers at Gauzer.
I bet.
And yeah. I'll talk a little bit about the tournament we just played in. And then Jason Arnott, who I've just got to know over the last year, played a little bit against him when he played in Edmonton. And great guy. He just bought up at Gauzer in the last year. So we're all members up here in the summer. We see each other, hang out.
What's Jason Arnott been doing? He's retired for how long?
He's been retired a few years. He and his wife have done very well in real estate. She's a very talented designer, and they've built these beautiful homes in Dallas, and people want to buy them. So every couple years,
that
I guess
works.
He's built. Yeah, he's doing well. He's invested his money wisely with a guy named Doug Wall out of Dallas, who is also a new member. And yeah, they're all good.
He was Jason Arnott was a superstar in Edmonton, and then he ended up in Jersey, I think, after that. And I stopped following him after that. But anyway, nice story. Him and his wife.
Yeah. They're doing well. He's a great guy. We're here this week for the Revelry tournament here at Gauzer. It's a great member guest. 60 teams of two. And I had Scotty Upshaw up here. He's my guest. And we won it last year. We got into the horse race, the final 12 teams, and we lost in the second round. I put it in the lake on my second shot. We played alternate shot. And it was a good thing politically, because I am working for the company that owns Gauzer Ranch. And I don't think the members would take kindly to me winning 2 years in a row. But we won some money. We won $4,000.
Whoa.
$2,000 each. So that was good. Yeah.
Company golf. You got to learn how to play. Tell me this, Russ. You stayed connected all these years to guys you used to play with. That I got to admit, not being a professional hockey player, but I don't know if there's a stronger fraternity than there is in guys who played hockey and how they stay together, whether they played on the same team or not. And now you guys are together. Ray Whitney is retired. You mentioned Brendan Moore. I know Kelly Chase is up there. Gretz is up there, I think. I know Brett Hull was there at one time. I don't know if he's still around or not, but
well, those guys, Holly was here, and Guy Carboneau, Bobby Ryan, who's still playing, and Tyler Johnson, they were all in the tournament, and Shane O'Brien.
What do you guys talk about now? When you're together with these I've been around the table when everyone's having a few. Everyone's getting fractured, as I like to say. Those are some of the greatest stories. But do you guys talk hockey when you get together?
We do. We tell stories, you know. We and it's great to hear the young guys who are still playing hear their stories. Kelly Chase is up here, so they were rolling off the Gloria, the
Stanley
Brett Hull,
Cup,
the Stanley Cup and the parade and everything. And so Chaser told this story. You can't make this up. So okay. He's in the parade with six retired St. Louis Blues.
Yeah.
And Ham.
Right.
And the actor Ham, whatever. I can't remember his
Corey?
First name.
Corey Ham?
No, he was all over the media. Anyways, so John Ham, I think. So
Madman.
Yeah.
Madman, yeah.
So get this. They get a 1933 fire truck to take them all in the parade. And Chaser goes, and the guy driving it was probably born in 1923. So they're waving to their crowd, and this old guy gets so excited. He's like waving and honking his horn and everything. He missed the turn in the middle of the parade. And went right through all these people. I had to get out of the way. And it took him 48 minutes to turn the truck around and get back in the parade. And all the guys had to get out and push the fire truck. Oh, it's just priceless.
Kelly Chase, of course, was a one-time St. Louis Blue tough guy and then has spent his post-hockey career as a color guy with the Blues. Yeah. So, good for him. That's hilarious. Oh, that is hilarious, God. Man.
I told him I was going to tell that story this weekend on the podcast. So anyways, we'll have to have Chaser on the show. Chris can figure this shit out for us.
And what's the fallout with Brett Hull? Everyone fell in love with him. He had a million views. There were three or four videos. Some were absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
That he did, of course, people started really liking him because they went to him pre-game, up in the box where he wasn't cheering like mad. And then, of course, he did this on stage
rendition of
Drunk is what it was.
Gloria.
But it was fantastic. And then
Noise in the back?
It's my fridge. It's fixed up. Oh. Just relax. It's fine.
Okay.
See, can you hear it now? No.
Oh, I can hear it now. Hey. Are you in your fridge?
No, I'm not in my fridge. Just don't worry about the fridge. It goes on and off. Anyway, Holly did it, and he did a great post-championship interview with Kelly Chase and all that stuff. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it. And so did you talk to Holly? Did he get up there after?
Oh yeah, he was playing, and we talked a couple times. But it was a continuation of the Stanley Cup parade, and we were all having way too much fun. And I was quite happy today to take a little rest and get off that train. Oh my God, I had the shakes out there today putting. I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh Jesus.
Yeah,
Jesus
not Russ. Good.
That's usually an indication of something, but don't worry about it.
Dehydration.
My old man used to, it's dehydration. Yeah. My old man used to say to me, your mother and I are so proud of you, son, that you jump from freckles to liver spots. That's fantastic. So Rusty, the draft, we got to talk some hockey. I got a bunch of other things I want to do, but the draft just happened. Both the NBA draft actually and the NFL or the NHL draft. And I gotta tell you, Russ, I'm not a big I don't watch too much of it, but it's so predictable, where guys are gonna go. And in fact, it's so predictable. There was a guy who went 20 for 20 today, some pundit.
Oh wow.
Yeah, who picked the first 20. Not necessarily the teams, but he picked the 20 kids who were gonna go first.
Yeah, right.
Russ, I couldn't get over watching them when they call these kids names. I'm of the opinion they're getting drafted too young, and I want to ask you about that. But Russ, how freaking skinny these kids are, Russ.
Oh, my gosh, like, yeah.
Do you see some of these kids walk up in this little tight little suit?
Yeah.
They weigh about – there was a kid who got drafted. He was 5'7". He weighs about 160.
Wow.
That's what I noticed coming out of this thing. Yeah. But what are your thoughts on the draft?
They're all, they're just turning 18 years old, these kids. So they're all just out of high school. And I turned 18 right around the draft, and I was in Montreal, and it's just such an awesome event. It's a life changer for these kids, for their families and the hard work they put in. And it's it's happened pretty quick. You know, you start playing when you're 4 or 5 years old and right. boom, you're 18, you're a superstar and you're getting drafted and potentially you're going to play in the NHL. I think that the draft, I think it's appropriate for 18. But I think that some of those kids are ready and some aren't, and it's a crapshoot. You know, next year, if those same 18-year-olds were 19, there mm-hmm. would be, they would go in different order. You know, look at some of the kids. You said they're super skinny and small, and they're still growing.
Right. You got drafted in, I don't know, 83, something like that, 1983. Yeah. Yeah. Went seventh overall. What would have happened to you, Russ, if you didn't get drafted? First of all, did you know for sure? I mean, if a guy goes in the first round, he pretty well knows he's going to get drafted. So did you know going into the draft, Russ, that you were 100% guaranteed that you were going to play in the NHL?
No, not necessarily, but I knew I was going to be in the top. I was going to be picked around 10 or 11th. That's where I was rated. It was kind of surprising that I went 7th. So I knew I was getting drafted that day. I just didn't know which team. There was like 4 or 5 teams that I talked to that interviewed me. And so I knew one of those 4 or 5 were going to take me.
Yeah. Russ, for those of us who don't know that much about the draft, it's not as much as a crapshoot as people think, because isn't Central Scouting, Russ, have a huge thing to do with a lot of teams that they rely on this thing? Explain how that all works, Russ, this central scouting thing for teams and what it means and how they use it.
So there's scouts all over the world now, and they rate and report on and scout kids constantly. And so they put it all into a database, and then they start rating the players, and it's a bunch of eyeballs in the stands all over the world watching kids and making notes. So they have your whole history, you know, family history, good or bad stuff off the ice. You know, what are your tendencies on the ice? Does he work hard? What does the coaches say? What did the media say? Mm-hmm. It just goes into a database, and then they're rating people.
Right. So the teams all get this same sort of report, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they have their own scouts. So then every team has their own scouting staff, and they rate internally in their team. They rate players, and sometimes they don't agree with the central scouting.
Right. So GMs are normally then not acting purely alone when it comes to it. They're leaning on all their scouts, right?
When you see the draft and they're sitting at a table, all those guys around the table are scouts, and they just start, you know, they're there going, you know, because things change. They think they're going to get a player, and then, oh, somebody picked them before they're picked. Now they have to have, okay, if he's not available, who are we taking second? If that person's not available, who are we taking third? Yep. You know, they're first, second, third choice, not like the first pick overall or the second pick overall. They know kind of who's going to be available in that where they're picking. And then they make decisions. And then there's trades too, right? Right. Sometimes there's a team will move up because they want a certain player. And then that changes the dynamics of the draft and throws, you know, a wrench into some team's plans.
Right.
Are you smoking 3 right now?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
No, I just finished. No, I just smoke one after another, Russ. The poster boy for chain smoking, Russ. Oh, Jesus. You know what, Russ? I only smoke when I have to deal with fucking people who annoy me, okay?
So, okay? That's why you got 4 going?
Yeah, you're finally getting the picture, okay? Are they drafting the kids they draft now, Russ? You're how many years removed? 20, 30, 35 years removed from the draft when you got drafted. Are they drafting a different type of player now, Russ, than they did over the years, or what are they looking for generally?
I think so. I think they're, like you said, there's a kid who's 5'7" and then there's probably a kid who's 6'5". And my draft year, our average height was like 5'11" and it was Stevie Yzerman. You know, we were all, they that draft was centerman, fast, and about 5'11", 180 pounds. Right. And it just changes year to year, except today, the game today is totally different than when I played. And they're drafting the best players in that position. In my opinion, they're taking, okay, we need a big defenseman. We're going to take the best available defenseman who can stay at home, play defense, or we want the best offensive defenseman. What I love about the game now is if you're good, they're going to find you and they're going to draft you and you've got a chance. When some years, if they were going after tough guys and the game was slow, you know, there's talented people that were overlooked in the draft.
Right.
But now it's everybody in the world who's good or great is going to get drafted.
You said a couple seconds ago that the game is totally different now. What do you mean when you say that?
Well, they took away the hooking and holding and spearing you in the nuts when you're in front of the net. Right. But they, you know, it was hooking and holding when I played. I mean, you'd go down the boards and the freaking guy would have, you know, just if he was big and slow, he'd just grab onto you, put latch onto you and go for a ride. And you can't,
no penalty,
you can't do that. Right. You can't slash in the hands anymore. I mean, God, when I played, we put metal, little metal pieces in our gloves so that you wouldn't break your hands with guys two-handing you all the time.
Oh, like little guards.
Yeah.
Like around your
knuckles. Little, they're really thin pieces of metal because it was perfect. And they go in the glove, top of the glove. So it'd protect your hand. Some guys put in hard plastic because it was lighter, but some guys had little pieces of thin metal.
Mark Messier once told me who was scientifically dirty, you know, was tough. And, you know, he said, you know, the greatest, dirtiest play to really hurt a guy without it being obvious, like a spear or a cross check to the throat, was the whack just above the wrist where the open part of your sleeve and your glove. Yeah. Right. He said that we ever want to get a guy's whammo right there in the top of the wrist.
That hurt like hell. And we used to attach another hard plastic piece to our elbow pad that would run down to your wrist. So when your glove, certain times when you're stick handling, your wrist would get exposed and mess was bang on. I mean, that hurt like hell.
Yeah. I would have been coming out in goalie equipment if I was a forward. So Rusty, what were, I thought today, you know, people are getting to know you. They've known you for years and we're into our segment about getting to know Russ a little better. Okay.
Fuck, that's scary. That's fucking scary. You're thinking. Yeah.
it really
I
is.
I had a thought. Uh-oh.
Fuck. but what I wanted to ask you first is, you know, you talked about getting drafted. You talked about what a day that was and how it's going to alter these kids' lives. You know, there was the NBA draft. There were six Canadians who actually got drafted in the National Basketball Association. And there was a really cool moment with a father hugging his kid. I don't know if you saw it. And they started interviewing the father and he just did not let go of his son. His son was absolutely, you know, brought to pieces that he got drafted. And those kids are off and running. Kids who get drafted in the NBA, they're good. They're set for life. They're going to be millionaires. Hockey's not always the case, as you pointed out. What would have you done, Russ, if you didn't get drafted? Or you didn't end up playing in the NHL?
My brother and I at the time were hanging out with some police officers in our community. And we used to ride with them. My uncle was in the RCMP in Canada. And so...
Don't tell me.
He probably arrested you a few times. In Pinoak, Alberta, if you drove through there, you would have been arrested by my uncle.
There's a mental hospital there that I popped into every once in a while.
You went down and... probably fathered a couple Hutterites. True story. My brother lived in Pinoca, played junior hockey, lived with my uncle. And on Friday nights, the local Hutterite community would come in and get guys to come out to father children so that they weren't.
Come on.
Yeah. They'd come in and pay guys to come out to their village. And they used to put a t-shirt over the. Yeah. It's a true story. They put a t-shirt over them so they couldn't see their face.
Here's a screeching left-hand turn on the show. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So we'll let me guess.
Jeff on.
So there's, is that what you were going to do? Jeff,
no, that, no, there's, that's a, there's probably a few Jeff Courtnels running around there.
Is that, I thought that's what you're going to tell me. Well, if I didn't play hockey, I'd be one of those Hunter Wright fellers.
Yeah, no. So my uncle was a in the police force. So Jeff and I might have done that. I had an interest with, you know, numbers and math. I thought maybe I'd get involved. If I went to school, I'd try accounting or something. But maybe didn't happen. I was thinking about it because we were really, I was enjoying riding around with these guys. And in Oak Bay, I mean, it wasn't dangerous at all. It was, and I knew where all the bad guys lived because, you know, I came across
you knew them.
Because I knew them. Yeah, I hung out with them.
if you didn't end up playing hockey, would have there been another sport? What were you good at other sports too? Or so, what? Most hockey players are pretty multi-talented sports-wise.
When I was 16, I was at Notre Dame in Saskatchewan going to prep school, high school.
Yeah,
and right. I played baseball and I got a letter from Princeton for hockey and baseball. And
really?
So I was okay. But I threw my shoulder out. And so I stopped playing baseball after that. I had to have Father Lemaire put it back together for me. I had to massage my shoulder.
Yeah. So you would have been maybe baseball.
Maybe baseball, baby. If I didn't throw my shoulder out.
When you look back, Rusty, as I look at some of my questions here, what was the worst city to play in, by the way, in the NHL? And best. We'll do a worst best fans and places to play.
I mean, Toronto, Montreal, man, were just awesome. I mean, it's just, unfortunately, I had a little taste of what it was like. We had some success in the playoffs, but Toronto, and then I went to Montreal, and the cities are just absolutely, they're incredible cities. The people love hockey, so they're great, two great places to play. And I played, every city I played in was really good. And I really enjoyed it there. But the cities that, you know, the city I really didn't want to play in was Hartford.
And I heard that a lot.
Oh, my God. I don't know. It was just the weirdest town. It was like there was just nothing going on there. And when I played, we used to stay over a lot in the city, you know, if we instead of getting on the charter and flying out right after the game.
Where is Hartford, Russ? Where is it near?
Near Boston, Connecticut.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, anyway.
But Hartford did go to the casino. Essa Tikkanen and I went out to Foxwoods. And that's like,
you know, casino. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy's, he's talking about Essa Tikkanen and he's a freaking legend. And we called it Tikkanese and he was my roommate. So he was my roommate. And he said on the road, he's like, hey guy, you know, super fast. Couldn't understand. It was like between English and Finnish and something else. And after a while, you know, you started understanding what he was saying because I roomed with him all the time, right? And so Trevor Linden was our captain. He goes, what the hell did he just say? He goes, meet in the lobby at 7:30. We're going to Mastro's for dinner.
You know, it's true though, right? I heard a very funny story when he was in Edmonton. Essa Tikkanen, of course, who's we're talking about, who's from Finland and could not speak a lick of English when he got here. He was a fantastic hockey player. And all he heard, so he was in the dressing room and he would just sit there and listen to guys, you know, after practice or sitting around the locker room. And then the first day they took him to McDonald's, you know, they said, we're all going to go to McDonald's. And he walked up to the counter. And he went to place his order, and all he knew is what he knew, what he heard, you know, a half an hour ago. And he went up to the counter and said, I want a fucking Big Mac and a fucking French fry. Because the guys were drawing. That's all he knew. Yeah. This is the first word he ever learned as a hockey player. But that's too funny.
Pavel Bure, when he arrived, he didn't speak English either. And my brother took him under his wing and was helping him out. And like helped him open a bank account and like, you know, get him a car, get him a place to live. Just
right.
Pavel loved my brother because he looked after him and they were very close. But Pavel calls the house in Vancouver, Jeff's wife at the time, Penny, answers the phone and it's Pavel. He goes, "Hello, Jeff home?" And she goes, "Oh no, he took the boys down to the driving range. They're hitting balls and they'll be back in about half an hour. Do you want me to leave him? You want to leave a message?" He goes, "Hello, is Jeff home?"
too funny. Oh, that's great. And what a player. What a hockey player.
Oh, my God. What a
great player. He was, and a bit of a trapper, by the way.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
good way with the women, I heard. Yeah. Good way with the women. Pavel didn't have any trouble.
Nope.
Tell me this, Russ, and growing up then.
Have
we
I?
We all. Well, you haven't quite yet, but a couple things. Then, who were your idols then, Russ? Growing up, you lived out in BC. There wasn't anyone on Vancouver on the Canucks back in those days that anyone liked too much, or maybe you did. But go ahead. Who'd you look up to?
My dad loved the Toronto Maple Leafs, so I loved the Toronto Maple Leafs. And my favorite player was Boreas Alming. I just something about Boreas and the way he skated, the way he played. He was awesome, and he was one of the first players from Europe to come to the league from Sweden, and him and Inge Hammerstrom.
Yeah, sure.
And so I just loved Boreas. And then when I got drafted by the Leafs, I think I've told this story before, but I got to, you know, I became a teammate and then a friend. And that my first season, I was eating Thanksgiving dinner at his house, and I just couldn't believe it. You know, you look up to this guy and... And he was everything I thought he was and more. And he really taught me the ropes of how to treat fans, how to respect the game, work ethic. Right. He was like Pavel Bure. He had one of the best bodies I've ever seen on a man, him and Pavel. Just ripped and freaking and Boria taught me a lot of things. So anyways, but
It's funny you say that. You've got me onto something else when you say so. Salmon was probably the guy that the coaches wanted new guys to go to or to brush up against. And I think in some of these circumstances where Jack Hughes went number one to Jersey, when Connor McDavid came to the Oilers, I'm not sure there was. I know rumor has it that he had a difficult time sort of socializing, and about the team and how to handle himself, just because he's played hockey his entire life, but there was no mentor there, for him. And that happens, Russ, I suspect in a lot of teams that guy like a Salmon could be a really important role, I would guess, with a hockey team.
It's really important to have a good guy in the room that's a leader. It doesn't have to be the best player, and it's awesome when you get a quality older player to mix and mingle with the young guys like that. Patrick Marleau in Toronto, I think, did a great job with Mitch Marner and Austin. They're posting pictures today all day. A sad day. We're gonna miss our buddy. And
right.
And he's been there, done that. So it helps when you have a really good leader,
particularly Russ, where there's still the business of hockey when they sign a guy like that, okay, when they sign a superstar, and they want to sell tickets, right? And right away there's this extraordinary stress put on these guys. Say, okay, by the way, you got 17 photo shoots tomorrow, you're in the parade for Klondike Days or whatever it is, you're going to throw the opening pitch at the games, and all of a sudden their life is like completely upside down. And some of these guys, you need these guys to ground them, I guess, right? To keep it in perspective.
Yeah, and they're young too. And they, young kids, they're still growing. They want to sleep and they don't know. Some of them don't know how, some of them don't know how to eat properly. I don't know. There's a lot that an older player can do to help out. I know when I played and got to that position, my wife and I always had the young guys over for dinner and we helped them out. They didn't have anything. They came from a house they boarded at or their parents' house, so.
when you look back, Russ, in your career, I feel like the great Charlie Rose with this interview, right? Although Charlie didn't do so well. He's gone now. Your best memory, Russ, in all those years you played hockey, which was 17 years, I think.
16 years.
16 years in your career. Yeah. You didn't win a Stanley Cup, so you're not one of these guys who would have the obvious answer in their career. Russ, when you got drafted, I should know this, and excuse me if I don't.
No,
was your father alive when you got
13,
drafted?
So that was just, that was a happy, sad day, because he would have been so freaking proud that I got drafted by the Leafs, man. He would have been like that basketball dad you were talking about. My dad was a big man. He was almost 6'1", which was probably now his average, but he was a big guy and he was good looking with white hair at a young age, and he was a tough guy.
Yep.
He was a guy that
I've seen
he
pictures.
Was that guy that walked into a room and everybody just stop and go, "Oh, there's Archie."
Oh, is that right?
And and he had a big booming voice and stuff, but he would have been so freaking happy, because he was a hockey player and his rights were owned by Detroit, and he stopped. After 1 year, he was in the minors. He quit because he just said, I want to play for Toronto, and I'm not going back. So he quit hockey, or at least quit his goal, or stopped playing pro. And then he played men's hockey back home. Yeah.
Well, that's still a great memory, though, that you would know. You hear lots of kids that don't have great relationships with their father. And so that's a good one for sure. So what memory do you take away, Russ, from your hockey career?
I think what I always tell people is I'm so blessed that I got to play hockey. Unfortunately, I didn't win the Stanley mm-hmm. Cup, but I'm so proud that I made the NHL and I had a long career. And I tell people that, one of the greatest accomplishments for me personally was making it to the NHL. Kid from Victoria, we don't have snow out there. Everything was indoors.
Right.
But I made it. And then my brother too, which was really cool. And we got to play. We played on the same team for a little bit, but we played against each other our whole careers.
That must have been a good memory, Jeff winning a cup.
Yeah, I almost missed my flight from Maui back to Toronto.
Well, of course it was fucking Maui.
Because I wanted to see him lift the cup, and we had to rip to the airport to go home. But that was a great memory, watching him lift the cup.
I think one of the most remarkable things I've seen, speaking of memories, I don't want to put words in your mouth about memories, but away from the ice, is what you accomplished in your hometown of Victoria. In handling your efforts to help out people with mental illness, that surely must mean something to you over all those years that you
Courtenay
were a
Celebrity
player.
Classic. We had three events in Victoria for mental health, and we raised money, which helped open up a emergency psychiatric center. And that center, when you go into that center, you get to stay for 72 hours until you get off the drugs, the booze, or you're they get properly medicated, and then we help build a longer stay facility on two floors in the new hospital and 54 beds. And so that was incredible. We were trying to raise $100,000 our first year, and we raised millions. And you were there and you emceed it, and it was so funny.
Yep.
I mean, you are so great. And we have a lot of good stories from those three events, and maybe we'll talk.
Well, that's remarkable what you did, because I know mental illness is very close to your heart, because it was in your family. And but one of the stories I got to tell, when you did that event, you and I, got to know each other. We beat to the same drum, and we've stayed connected over all these years. And I came flying into town, about a couple bottles of Zambuca deep when I landed, and you had us all picked up by cops, and it was a fantastic deal. And I was raring to go, and you pulled me aside and said, okay, look, Skipper, yeah. Skipper, look me in the eyes here. Listen. You gotta do this event, but tonight is just you and the guy from Dallas. What's his name? The actor?
Patrick Duffy.
Patrick Duffy, Jimmy, you and Patrick are gonna walk out on stage, and you're gonna introduce the celebrities, you know? And you said, look, I need you to just conform. I need you just let Patrick do this. I know it's going to be hard for you because I've seen you go like a freaking Tasmanian devil. And he goes, tomorrow night after this, it's your night. You know, you can do it. And Kid Rock was the talk of the town, Pam Anderson and Kid Rock. And I remember going over this list with Patrick Duffy saying, okay, we're going to alternate names. And the list of celebs was Michael Bublé and Chad Kruger and Wayne was there. Guys from the Eagles and... you know, on and on and on, right? And I came out on stage and immediately ran down the middle of the stage. I said, where is she? Where's Pam? I want to see her. But the following night, we had the golf tournament and great golf course. And I remember there's a section on that golf course, which is fantastic for charity events because it's about four holes that converge onto the same area. So you end up having a million laughs and you had a bar on every hole and you did a paint by numbers on this painting, you know, and you said, Jimmy, sign a fish there. There's all these fish. I said, Russ, this is brutal. He goes, I said, this is stupid. He goes, no, we auction it off. I said, no one's going to pay anything for this. You said, wait till you see it.
Yeah.
Colors are running all over the place. I'm fucking hammered. I'm painting three fish. And anyway, at the end of the day, this guy walks out with this unbelievable masterpiece that he puts together, and it's framed and it's in glass. And I grab this thing and I look at it, and you sort of wink at me going, I told you. And I go, we got to auction this off. And I'm standing up there and I'm wheeling it around in front of me. I go, bang, bang, bang. Next thing I know, really, like, $35,000 or something, you know? And I'm going, This is crazy. 35. Somebody give me 50 grand. And I turned fast and I said, and I remember the whole frame just collapsed. Remember the whole thing just
shattered.
I thought it shattered. The glass turned to sand. And you're looking at me going, Oh my fucking God. What did you do? And then Jeff, your brother in the back goes, I'll give you $11.
You're just holding.
Oh my God.
You guys.
It was just a bizarre event, man. It's just like what? And then the other guy you had, that's right when these shows about making cars started coming along, you know, where they pimped out cars. It's that long ago. And you had a guy, you said, wait till you see this guy, Jimmy. He made a motorbike for us. Right. And I'm like, what? Yeah. But he's a little whacked. He hasn't quite finished it, but he's on his way here. The paint's still wet. And the freaking thing, this is at the beautiful, iconic Victoria Country Club. And next thing we hear, like, vroom, vroom, and the guy comes flying across the putting green with the motorbike, slams the brakes on, takes out about 10 yards of turf, right? Lays the bike down and goes, here's your bike, Russ. Don't ever ask me again.
Bill Comrie
bought it for $100,000.
So
Bill Comrie bought
it. Bill had just sold it.
I'll tell you how drunk Bill was. He doesn't know how to ride a motorbike, and he bought it for 70 or 80 grand.
It was so funny. So we're all outside sitting there, and Bill Comrie had just sold the brick warehouse in Canada.
And Bill's sons, Mike, of course. Yeah. Bill's sons, a little backstory. We're both great players, so, Mike Comrie and Paul. And
Jimmy's Paul played, auctioning off this motorcycle, and he's like, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $10,000. And this, every time he raised his hand, this guy would nod. Jimmy would go $15,000, $20,000. And then Bill Comrie's got his arms crossed, and he's at $50,000, and he's looking down at this guy, and he's like, the guy's in blue jeans, and he had suspenders on, remember? Because he'd just come from his farm. He looked like he was from Duck Dynasty, from his farm. And he wanted to be there for this motorcycle. And it got up to like 80, 90 grand, 100. And then the guy quit. He's like, I'm not paying that. And Comrie comes over and goes, I thought I was the wealthiest guy in the room. And my brother goes, no, he's married to the wealthiest woman in Canada.
Right. Which is, because I remember Billy, Billy's a longtime friend of mine as well, and as yours, and I've been at events, and he's super generous. He's over the top generous. He buys shit that he needs nothing to do with it. And he'll always look at me when I'm doing the auctions and give me a little nudge. I want this, Jimmy. Okay, I'm going to get this. And I know he will just up the winning bid, right? And he gives me the nudge on the bike. Right. And I'm going, no problem, Billy. And I just remember him looking around the room going, I hate being outriched. I fucking can't stand this.
Oh, that was good.
Anyway, great story. Listen now, back to you in our this is a great segment. Tell us something, Russ, that we don't know about you. These are the old standards in 20 questions. Stuff that people wouldn't know about you. That I know about you that nobody else would, but I want to hear it from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, my wife, she was an actress and did very well. She was a commercial, did a lot of commercials, did some movies, some daytime shows. And then once we got married and started a family, she stopped doing that. And
how'd you meet, how'd you meet?
I met an actress at one of David Foster's events in Victoria. And she invited me down to LA, and I was playing in Montreal at the time. So I went, and I was single, so I went down. Yeah.
Never miss a party.
So I went down there for about 3 or 4 weeks, hung out, and went to camp. And Paris was one of the girls that I was hanging out with. So there was Kimber Sissons. Yeah. She was on one of those Baywatch shows or something. Yeah. Very good-looking girl from Tawassan.
Yeah.
And then Kelly Emberg had just broke up with Rod Stewart, so she was in the group. My wife and two other actresses, I don't know their names. And so I was hanging out with these five beautiful women, and then one of the girls, I think, might have been married. Anyways, we'd go out every night for dinners and then work out there during the day, and they'd go to auditions. And so I ended up...
Everything okay, Russ, at that point?
Yeah, I'm doing all
is
right.
Everything okay? So, you're doing all right?
Then I went back to Montreal. I talked to my who was my friend then, Paris, my wife, and we just talked every month. I get on the phone, call her, and I'm like, God, I really like this girl. And so I flew back to LA after the season, and I just chased her around LA until she said she said yes. So it was a quick courtship because I made the 91 Canada Cup team that year. So I had to be back in Toronto August 1st. So it was pretty quick. We dated and
I did.
Did. And then what was really cool. So I told my mom, I'm in love with this girl. And, you know, I told her she's an actress. She's this, she's that. And and her mom is Sarah Vaughan. My mom went nuts. She goes, oh my God, I love Sarah Vaughan. And for anybody out there who loves jazz, you know who she is. And anyone who hasn't heard her, good chance you have heard her because they play it in a lot of restaurants and different places.
Dude, you're talking to a guy. My father was a jazz piano player as a hobby, and he was a good one. And Sarah Vaughan, I used to listen to Sarah Vaughan. She was born in 1925, and she won 4 or 5 Grammy Awards. She was a jazz vocalist like none other. And when I heard, when you first told me that, I said, no, she's not. You got to be kidding me. And I was with a buddy down in L.A. We went over to your house, and he jumped on a piano of Sarah Vaughan's that was in your family.
We have Brown Baby Grand, a black Baby Grand, and then a upright. The upright is at Oaks Christian School in the middle school lunchroom, and the kids get to play it at lunch hour and after school.
Yep.
The black one's in our house, the brown one's in storage, and we've taken those pianos everywhere we go, and it's just amazing. So we have she has a Grammy and an Emmy, and that sits on the piano, and they're making a movie. Yeah. They're going to be coming out with a movie about her, and my wife's really excited about that, helping the writers, you know, tell stories about her, and they're gonna take this movie and roll. I did not meet her. I met Paris in I know.
She died in 1990.
I met Paris in July of 1990. And then we got engaged in 91. We got married in 92. And we had Allie, our first child, in 93. Happened all pretty quick.
Yeah, you have three kids, yeah. And they're all talented in their own right, of course, right? Your son's playing college hockey. Your daughter was a superstar soccer and track.
I got to tell athlete. You a Paul Coffey story.
Right?
About
love Paul Coffey. Yep, played for the Oilers. Right, great defenseman, Hall of Famer.
During the lockout, Paul and Steph are on this trip. Wayne and Janet Gretzky, Rick Tocchet and his wife or girlfriend at the time, and Paris and I and. Yeah,
so yeah, we've been through a few.
We're sitting across from them, and they found out they were pregnant, and so we're saying, "Hey, you know, just so you know, when you have the baby, you have your first baby, and you're sitting, you'll be sitting across from each other. Look, you'll be sleep deprived a few months in, and you'll be going, "What the fuck did I just do?" And I fucking hate your guts. And they looked at us like that is the. They went back to their hotel room, and they were like. That is the worst story I've ever had. That'll never happen to us. Four months in, creepy, they call us, man. Put us on speakerphone, and they said, we just had that conversation you told us we were going to have. And they were both laughing. They said, in the middle of this fight, they went, Paris and Russ told us we were going to do this.
Yeah, my old man used to knock people out when they were having kids, you know, and he was, you know, we were all older and there's always someone around, you know, with a newborn or something like that. My old man would always say, I'm going to tell you kids something, you know, about children. They're highly, highly overrated.
Well, Paris and I have three great children. So anyway. Allie's turning 26, Lawton's 23. And Brooklyn is 16. Looks like she's getting recruited for soccer. Our youngest is getting recruited for soccer and track. And Allie did that at UCLA, won a national title. And she is hoping to get a – she's a model now, and she's hoping to get into the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. She's been trying out for the last few years. Yeah, if you go on their Instagram, you'll see they posted her –
What?
Like she sent in a video and pictures of herself and Sports Illustrated posted it. Yeah. So we're really hoping that she gets invited to the, I don't know if that's a tryout or how it works, but there is a competition to get it. Yeah. So she's doing great. Lawton's at Western Michigan playing hockey. He's doing great. You know, going to be a senior this year. So big year for Lawton. And we're just, you know, we're a happy family. We love each other and we're behind each other 100%. Yeah.
Isn't that nice? Russ, listen, I got to be honest. Russ, I got to be honest. I'm the first guy ripping to the store when the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition comes out. Okay, pal. Okay.
Oh, no.
I'm just saying, Russ. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Do you really want your daughter to be a Sports Illustrated? You know your friends, Russ. This will be... I either really want her to be or I really don't
Maybe
want
we'll
her to be.
Maybe we'll just have that page taken out in all of Alberta.
Yeah. Anyway, cool story. I love, you know, Mike, my son just popped in. You know what I call my son's name is Jake, my oldest boy. He's 19. I call him the tap. Okay. I call him the tap, Russ, because he's here, you know, pops by every once in a while when he needs a little, hey dad, can I tap you up for 40?
Yeah.
I need 50 or 60. He's the tap.
Yeah.
Oh, he just got me again. Well, and he comes when I'm doing the podcast.
Yeah.
So I know I can't get up and he grabs the dough. Anyway, go on. Yeah. He's ripping me off, Russ. Good show, Rusty. I had some other stuff for you, but we're going to save it. We're going to save it for another show. You got to, what are you going to invite? Give these kids? They got drafted, Russ. What are you telling kids, these high-level hockey players? You have to give them some advice.
Don't take your foot off the gas pedal and keep working hard and, you know, you're just one step away and you've got a few more, you know, you're one step closer, I should say, to your goal of making it, but you got a few steps left. So I just think that it's a great day for the family, everybody to enjoy. Now you know where you're going to play, hopefully, and you just got to go back to the grind and pick it up now and work harder than you've ever worked because there's so much competition out there. And just because you're drafting the first round doesn't mean a 10th rounder is going to jump ahead of you because kids keep improving.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens all day long.
Yeah.
Find a mentor. That's what I'm going to tell them. Find a Borea Salmi, right, when you go there. Rusty, go back to finishing. No, you're probably halfway through a nice red. Off. I'm looking at the time.
I'm not. Yeah, I know.
Oh, wait. Get the calendar. Mark the day. Russ is taking a day off.
I know where
off.
The guys are right now, and I bet you anything Ray Whitney's open a nice bottle of wine.
How can such a little guy pack away so much wine? We're going to get him on the show one day. So, good show, Rusty. Thanks a lot. Great to have you on board again this week. I never know week to week because you might be in freaking, I don't know, somewhere around the world. But you're here to stay in Idaho for the summer. Right. We're going to keep coming to everyone once a week. And next week will be no different. We're back again on the Suspendables. Thanks a lot, Russ. You've been listening to Jungle Jim Jerome and Russ Corden on the Suspendables. And we've partnered with Global Story Network, who are helping us launch this whole thing, as well as many other podcasts that they do. Look them up, globalstorynetwork.com, and you're going to find lots of great stuff there that you want to listen to. So take it easy, Rusty. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, over and out.